For Food Engineering's May article on integrating equipment, I'm speaking with Matt Beyer, who has extensive experience with integrating process control equipment on the plant floor. Having previously been employed by food processing companies, Matt is now senior process engineer at CRB USA. First, tell me a little bit about your experiences, especially when it comes to integrating process and or packaging equipment, having had 20 years of experience in the real world. I'm sure you can tell a lot of stories.
Yes, I can. I mean, I can, and I'll try to keep them short and concise and on point. So I started my life out with a feed science and milling management degree from Kansas State University, and that teaches you how to design, build, and manage feed milling or process milling facilities. Could be extrusion facilities, could be a lot of things, but food facilities in general. Over the last 25 years, I'd started at the floor level with production facilities and feed milling, soybean processing, pet food processing, an extensive amount of time in corn wet milling, which included ethanol production, fructose mm-hmm. production, things of that nature. And in that industry is where I started doing process engineering. I had a knack for that and moved up in my career from process engineering to capital engineer to design new plants, startup engineer, and then eventually to engineering manager with my last company prior to CRB. Came to CRB because my plant got shut down. CRB was a good opportunity for me to bring the manufacturing side to the design side. So our food group was relatively young, and they were really in need of real world experience so that they could have more information from the owner's side. And that's mm-hmm. what I bring to the group is owner side view and understanding. And in a lot of cases, I know what they're looking for because I was there. So that's kind of in a nutshell how I started and moved my way all the way through and up and now with CRB designing facilities.
You've had such an extensive background with this that this would seem to be a natural fit when it comes to helping out food companies. We go out to food companies of all sizes, from mom and pop operations to, you know, General Mills and Kellogg's. So obviously those guys have their own engineering departments, but the smaller companies, some of the medium-sized companies, they probably have a plant engineer who's kind of responsible for everything. There are a lot of companies out there with equipment that's been sitting around for 2 decades, 3 decades. It's been working. It's fine. But they want to do upgrades. I'm just thinking here in terms of where do they get started, and should they be setting goals first before they do anything else? And after they set goals, if that's what they should be doing, then what?
So whether you're a very small single plant facility with, you know, 10, 15 people, whatever the number, or a multinational conglomerate company, the very first thing you have to do is set goals. Because if you don't set a goal, you don't know if you've fulfilled what you were trying to do. So that goal is very important. And it's not just, you know, where you want to go. It's how you judge how you got there and grade yourself as to how well you did. So whether it's cost or whether it's improving the equipment's efficiencies, or maybe it is reducing the actual workforce because, you know, maybe unemployment is low enough in an area that you struggle to find enough qualified workers. There's many, many, many reasons for companies to want to automate. So that's why I definitely feel it is very important to start with goals, no matter what your size. And if you have trouble trying to frame that, then there's some options to go out and try and find help to help even just have you set goals and define what you want to do.
Because I'm sure there are a lot of smaller, medium-sized companies that don't know where to get started.
That's very true. Most companies, like you've described, you know, they may only have a engineer, or it might just be a plant manager and an engineering and a maintenance manager that are driving the work. So what do you do? Well, what I did in the past, and I've been on both sides, is first thing is I reach out to the manufacturer that made the equipment. whether it's old or not doesn't matter. All the companies have integrated and moved forward with automating their own equipment. So a good place to start is with your equipment manufacturer to say, okay, where have you come from the 20 years ago when I bought this? And at what level of automation can you offer right now? And as well as, can this model be upgraded? And if so, who have you used and who has been successful in the past? So, I mean, that's one of your first stops. Now, if the vendor doesn't exist, the manufacturer doesn't exist, or they're not very helpful, then the pathway that I've used is to reach out to industry experts, whether it be going to a local university to talk to a department there to find out. That's a great source of information with all the ag universities around. Another one is to go out to past colleagues or current colleagues that work at other industrial sites for other companies and elicit, you know, who have you had success with? I mean, you shouldn't be scared to ask a question. I mean, you really shouldn't to reach out and look for help because you don't want to throw money down the drain because you didn't frame your statement properly and know what you wanted to do and then end up with the wrong group to do it for you.
Okay. And there's a chance that you'd mentioned that a company might not be in business any longer. If you actually have probably run into that situation?
I have. There's been many cases where there's been an awful lot of combination, you know, companies buying companies, buying companies out there. And during that process, a lot of them have gone from the paper documentation age to the electronic age. And when they purchased those companies and pulled forward, a lot of times that information is sitting in a file somewhere that may not even be anywhere near the current owner.
Oh, boy.
You can usually always track a vendor down. Most of the equipment, it's not that it's manufactured. It's just that somebody else may own them. And there could be a competitor now that was there that you could go to as well. That's kind of the, you can run into that roadblock, but you're not stopped. I've never been so stumped on finding help for a manufacturer. I mean, it's been pretty rare where there was nowhere to go and you couldn't track it down. It's just sometimes the story took a little bit longer to frame and find them.
The story reminds me of finding drivers for some old piece of software that you want to run and, you know, and then you find out the company's out of business. And guess what? The last driver written for it was Windows XP.
Yep. That's a very common situation. I've had a situation like that with a boiler where the PLC was on a version that only existed on one laptop, one boiler group. And they only kept that laptop for our boiler at that point. And we ended up upgrading that into a newer era of PLC. So that's very plausible that can happen.
One of my questions that I had for you was, of course, it'd be nice to have an unlimited budget to do upgrading. And I guess if you had an unlimited budget, you'd be building a new greenfield facility. So most people don't have that kind of option. Although I'm thinking today, a lot of times the food plants are just not upgradable in terms of meeting, you know, FDA FSMA specifications or local building codes or electrical codes, then maybe they do have to worry about building a new facility. But what's your experience with tying equipment together? That's, you know, you got one piece is 30 years old, another piece is 20 years old. Is this something you do piecemeal and maybe, you know, do you add sensors to it, thinking that maybe, well, if you can't actually get these islands of automation, call it the islands of automation, but you can't get them working in concert together, maybe you could at least do something with data you could collect if you had sensors in the right places?
This happens frequently. So when you're looking at updating a facility, is, you know, electronic infrastructure and data collection and controls, one of the first things you have to do is, and I've been through this with one company, is they actually formed a committee that went through and they identified, okay, who are the four or five plants, target plants, for the reasons they state that they want to look at. Because they knew that the budget was going to be very large, no matter what it was, because most of these plants were 80 to 90 years old. Wow. If not older in some cases. And some were control panels, some were push button. You know, it was everything from that you can imagine, from no control to complete control. So they had to prioritize the plants and the processes that they wanted to take care of first. And then they had to work within the budget that the corporation could support and the amount of years they wanted to attack it. So in this case, it was a five-year plan. They had X percentage of the corporate capital budget that was going to be applied to it. And then the projects were identified at each plant level. And one plant might have 20 projects. But out of those 20 projects, there may only be two or three that had the best payback and return on investment for the company. So they would rank, take those five best, and then they would say, okay, in year one, we're going to allocate X amount of money, and it's going to take care of projects 1 through 6. At that point, your company would engage either internal engineering, in this case, external engineering in some cases, to determine the scope of each individual project and start to drill down to a little more detailed design for that. The other important question they had to answer in the beginning is all these plants use different platforms of control. There's a multitude of different companies have different controls out there, or like you said, a lot were PLC based. So do you want a common control infrastructure for everybody? So company X's distributive control system or company Y's? Because, you know, they're with the direction technology is going, it is very plausible that you could have one department that all they do is program and oversee that distributed control system for the whole entire company for each individual plant. Now, in most cases, in fact, in the older plants, the equipment did not have enough instrumentation to give you data to be able to control. So you're right. There are places that you'd want to do more data, whether it be to add a temperature transmitter, a pressure transmitter, a flow device. You had to augment the information that was coming back that would allow you to control the equipment. So that was something you had to identify in your project is, okay, if we want to control islands 1, 2, and 3, and we want them to work with each other, what are we missing to be able to control all these? And it may be 6 or 7 key pieces of instrumentational equipment, and then also processing capacity to do that.
What if you have like old Modicon controllers? They're not made anymore, are they? And you've got a limited number of inputs to them. And where would you get I/O cards for them? What do you do in a situation like that?
So a situation like that, I did go through in one of my plants. The plant was extremely old. It was PLC based predominantly. In the end, we kind of had a hybrid system where we had a distributive control system that went out to the PLCs. Now, we had to upgrade or replace several PLC platforms. In fact, the one I was talking about, the boiler, that was a PLC 100. I mean, that was a 100 level. That was old. So we couldn't even, you can't get cards. There's a secondary market for that stuff, but you couldn't even, like you said, you can't find parts. And there is a lot of cases of companies trying to survive longer. So that secondary market is allowing some plants and some companies to avoid upgrading their control systems a little bit longer. But ultimately, your option is you have to replace the control. So that would be a PLC platform. So you want to identify the one that will be the most expeditious and cost effective to implement with the least amount of interference with your process. It may be putting a whole new control system in and then having a crossover or cutover, like if at an automobile plant, they shut down for 2 to 3 weeks once a year for changeover, and that's when you do your change. So very common theme. It happens all the time. It's very, very common. So right on point with that.
Assuming you want to change out all these controllers, and which now you can support more sensors. At this point, what software functionality do you need to back all this up? And gee, wouldn't it be nice to replace some of the old push button panels with, you know, GUIs to make it easier for operators? So what are we looking at in terms of software issues?
One of the plants I did work for, which had the boiler as well, they had all push buttons. So it was the old standard of there was a 50-foot long control panel, You called it the control panel, but you know, the entire process was stenciled on it. You had switches, lights, buttons, and that's how you ran the plant. They went from that in that facility to a complete Windows-based control system with, you know, self-elevating control monitors and desk. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they made that step. And that was kind of that hybrid where you had a distributive control system that allowed that company that built the distributed control system, they were able to build the entire facility in that distributed control system and then communicate, tie into the actual field level PLCs. You had to make, you know, wire runs and things of that nature. But that new distributed control system then had a data historian with it. It had trending software with it. It had, you know, all the power of new technology while still utilizing some very old PLC units out in the facility. So it is very, very plausible and very possible to do that and functional
and
in the end.
And it can be done cost effectively. I mean, the basic requirements would, you at least need a data historian, right?
If you're going to use big data and in today's age, you have to have a historian in my book. That historian allows you to do so much troubleshooting and trending. One of the best examples, you know, for using data, there's a couple of them actually. One, from a food standpoint, trackability, traceability. Mm-hmm. It allows you to go back through history and find when something was made. I mean, and there's softwares that will go out and store the data so that you can pull that out properly. The other one is trendability and preventative maintenance. I will say that a lot of decisions, as you may well know, on what was causing a problem with a piece of machinery was based on maybe one or two data and somebody that had been around it for 20 years. Well, now can throw trendability that may identify it's been something not even associated with that piece of equipment. It might have been a piece of equipment above it that was vibrating a building or something. And so the big data historians are extremely important, especially if you're going to move into predictable maintenance. And if you're going to, you know, if you're a food processing facility that needs to be able to track and trace all the materials that you've used in the end products.
Well, in your past endeavors and your current position with CRB, is there a move by processors to want to put in predictive control systems? I know a lot of them have been operating like when something breaks, go replace it. And then if you don't have the part in stock, you're really up the creek.
Oh, most definitely. There's a lot of companies out there that specialize in just predictive maintenance programs and coming in and explaining to you where places you can take advantage of it, how it pays for itself. We put a predictive maintenance program and system in two plants I was at for the same company, but two separate plants. And they came in and they did some cursory evaluations on equipment. And a couple of things that they can do for you. Number one, they can predict what you need to store for spare parts. In a lot of cases, facilities have millions of dollars in spare parts stored that are not pertinent to their operation. What is actually failing on a regular basis, there's two ways to approach it. One, you stock the correct parts, it tells you. The second is to actually use the data to figure out why it's failing. So whether it's using temperature transmitters on the bearing or using vibration probes and vibration monitoring or sonic even, traps, steam traps, they now put sonic on them. I was in a facility that did that and it would print a report every day and it would tell them which traps may have failed and need replaced or be failing. Mm. So then you can schedule your maintenance and it becomes when you want to do it, not when it wants you to do it, basically. Right. So that's the biggest thing about using data to define and trend is you take control of the situation. The plant isn't running you. You're running the plant at that point. And there's a lot of money involved in it.
So if you're upgrading a plant, it makes sense to do something with predictive maintenance if you don't have it already. It makes a lot of sense to build that into your upgrade then?
In some cases, if you're a smaller facility, it makes sense that you have the historian in place and that you have the capabilities to track and trend. but you may not have the actual functional maintenance program, whether it be, I mean, there's several different manufacturers of programs out there that you can use. I mean, I think to use one, SAP is one that's out there. I mean, there's several groups out there that have different softwares. So you don't need to start with that software. But if the heart of your plant has a capability of processing the data and historizing data and collecting it and being able to be expanded and easily expanded, then you have the capabilities to bolt that on when that makes more sense potentially down the road. Okay. But you don't have to have it all at once.
I know some of the newer packaging equipment, if you look at it, it can practically repair itself. I mean, and tell the operator where the problem is. I mean, it's kind of like some of the newer printers you buy today are pretty much capable of telling you what their problem is. And it's like, if you own HP laser printers, they can even order you a new cartridge.
Yeah. And that is an option too. I mean, you have that in data equipment now in from some manufacturers, not all, where they will do for a fee online monitoring, and they will tell you, hey, this is failing. You're going to need this part. You're exactly right. That's where some of this is going, to where facilities don't want to or don't have the ability to maintain technical staff of maintenance, instrumentation, and controls people. So they have to look outside the box and go to a third party that can monitor that for you. And, you know, it's decentralized, you know, maintenance oversight, if you will.
We don't have a whole lot of time, but a couple questions I'd like to ask yet that, and readers can go back to the actual article to find more helpful information, but I'd like to get your crystal ball and see if you can have any idea what the landscape looks like for process control in the future and tools. What kind of tools are there to make this whole upgrading, updating and integration process easier than what it is today? What do you think will be out there, say 5 or 10 years from now, that will make your life as an integrator easier?
The sky is almost the limit where technology goes. I would say, like today, things are window-based. A processor that once took up half a room is now, you know, the size of a briefcase. There's virtual servers that, you know, so they're not even on site. Mm-hmm. There's a third party taking care of them for you. Where I see controls going, I mean, it's being driven by the fact it's really tough to get skilled labor into these facilities. And in the end, anything that you automate, that piece of equipment is always at work. It can work 24/7 in most cases, doesn't need a break, doesn't need food, needs a little bit of TLC, a little bit of oversight. But, you know, in general, a lot of these facilities just find it very hard to find skilled, dependable labor. So where I see this going is anything that can be automated is going to be automated. And what wasn't able to be automated last week may be able to be today. I can see where control panels, you know, even right now we're looking at a video monitor. I can see where it won't even be a video monitor. It'd be more like like the movies, but where it's just presented to you in front of you anywhere in a room, where it's or potentially even a VR type of situation. So it'd be similar to that. I mean, that's where it's going to go. It is going to get to the point that you may have 10 facilities and the control room may actually be in some remote location somewhere. And with none of the operators on site, you would maybe have caretakers, if you will, you know, maintenance, instrument controls, and, you know, some interaction staff for things that can't be automated. But ultimately, you know, centralizing the running of multiple plants is extremely efficient from a company standpoint.
I think the question then remains is, can we do it securely over the internet without it being hacked? I'm hoping that we get better at that sort of thing.
I think that is plausible to a point. I mean, anything that's been created, it's been proven can be hacked at some point in time. I mean, you give somebody that's bored enough time, or that has been pointed at to do something, that they will try and hack it. Now, you know, there are ways to get around that. You can have a dedicated line. There are such things. In fact, a facility we just were taking care of just recently, they have a dedicated line from one facility in one part of the state all the way to the next facility we were built, so that, you know, that is their That is their connection, and it's an added level of security. I think anytime something goes over the air, there's always the chance. There may be some reversion where it's more hardwired. I mean, if you will. I mean, they say today, one of the most secure items you can have is a fax machine. Nobody knows how to hack it. They don't know what it is. I mean, they quite literally, that's why a lot of healthcare still uses fax machines in some cases, because it's very hard to hack such a thing. We don't want to do wireless because it could be hacked. We don't want to do, you know, radio because it can be hacked. And the software companies continue to upgrade their security protocols. So I don't know if you ever have a system that you can call unhackable unless it's only at one site. I mean, that's, you know, I don't know how you get past that. It is a risk, but there's plenty of companies and plenty of ingenious people that are working on ways to mitigate that.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to delve into this discussion on integrating islands of automation. Finally, I'd like to thank CRB USA for helping with this interview. One of my early encounters with CRB USA was visiting Mars Chocolate, which was Food Engineering's 2015 Plant of the Year, where CRB was the major engineering force behind the development of the facility. Mars' first new candy plant in North America in 35 years. Not only can CRB design the automation system, their engineering crews have plenty of experience with expansions and upgrades as well. And some of them, like Matt, have come over from the other side to share their experience. Thank you again, Matt, for taking some time out to talk about this.
Yeah, Wayne, anytime. I'm happy to help.